Welcome to Disruptive Branding by Saffron Brand Consultants. In this podcast, we will share the most important insights that we have gathered from several decades of working closely with some of the world's most disruptive brands. We will show how every business, startup to enterprise, can design its brand using disruptive thought and action. From how-to sessions with members of our executive team to conversations with our clients, learn firsthand how to position your brand to compete with disruptive challenges and to challenge and disrupt yourself.
With International Women's Day taking place earlier this month, we've seen many of the world's leading brands talking about inclusion and diversity. Gender, along with race, tends to be central to brands' diversity and inclusion commitments. But something we don't always see or hear about as much is disability inclusion. Today, I'm joined by Joanna McGrath, CEO of the Valuable 500, an organization whose mission is to put disability inclusion on the business leadership agenda of 500 of the world's leading businesses. Hi, Joanna, thanks for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me. Hi, Emma.
So let's start with my first question. Could you tell us more about the Valuable 500 and how it's driving system change for disability inclusion?
Yes, of course, with pleasure. Okay, so the Valuable 500 is a global movement to ask 500 CEOs to put disability inclusion on their leadership agenda. And by that, we mean we want 500 CEOs to talk about disability inclusion through the lens of whatever topic is already on their board agenda, whether that's talent, whether that's recruitment, whether that's innovation, whether that's research, and to take one action from that conversation. And the principle is that if we've got 500 companies around the world, each taking one action at the same time, even if the action is very different, and then that will start to make changes, broader changes happen outside of the business system. We launched the Valuable 500 2 years ago now at Davos in 2019. And Caroline Casey, who is our founder, was on the main stage at Davos talking about disability inclusion for the first time. So this was a historic moment in itself, talking about disability as an innovator, as a market creator. And she was on stage with Bloomberg, with Microsoft, with Procter & Gamble, and with Paul Polman, our chairman, and a number of other leaders. Asking them really to take this commitment to action back to their businesses and be the kind of founding leaders, if you like, of this movement. And that's where it really all started. 2 years on, we now have 445 CEOs committed to action, many of which have already taken actions and are continuing to take action. We're due to get to our 500 in the next 4 weeks or so. So we're excited to kind of be getting to the end of phase one, where we'll have our 500 leaders, we'll have our 500 businesses on board, and we'll have those 500 actions to share with the world. And what I would say is that those leaders representing 35 different countries, so this is a truly global movement. The leaders collectively are responsible for over $7 trillion worth of revenue. So they're a hugely influential group. To have 445 people responsible for such a huge amount of revenue, a huge number of customers, a huge number of people, the power of that collective is just absolutely enormous. So we're really excited about the genuine change that group can drive. Because let's face it, we all work for businesses, we all buy from brands, we all believe in brands. That's where the power lies. So, yeah.
Well, congratulations, because you've come an incredibly long way in a relatively short amount of time.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's been, I would say, hard work, but exciting work. And actually, we thought when the pandemic hit last year, that it would be, you know, that might be the end of the movement, or we wouldn't be able to speak to people because obviously the agendas were changing and people were so sideswiped by the pandemic and having to remodel their businesses. But actually this last year has been a bigger focus than ever on the chief diversity officers of businesses, of how do we make sure that we're inclusive for all of our people to be able to work at the drop of a hat from home. How do we make sure our customers can get access to our products really easily? So again, companies that were thinking about accessibility for customers years ago have been the kind of the big winners over the last year, because let's face it, we've all been facing isolation. We've all been facing a different set of circumstances to the norm. And it's almost given us that, it's given us all a taste of what mass isolation can feel like. So collectively, there is that I feel like there's a broader empathy for being more inclusive of different segments of society.
Absolutely. And could you tell us what the business case for disability inclusion is?
Yes, I find this question really, this sort of question interesting. We hear this from journalists quite a lot. It's kind of like, how can you back up the business case for disability inclusion? Have you got more statistics or examples of why we should be more inclusive of people with disabilities? And I find it such an odd question, because you wouldn't have media outlets asking for the business case to include women in business, or to include women as customers, or men for that matter. It seems such an odd question to ask. However, it is one that does get asked. And if businesses are looking for a reason to be more inclusive of people with disabilities, both as employees and as customers, then my argument would be that there's money in it. You know, people with disabilities that work have money to spend. People with disabilities that don't work have money to spend. And people with disabilities that can't work might have carers or families that have money to spend. So there's a huge market out there that businesses can be tapping into and accessing by making sure their products are more inclusive of people with disabilities, making sure their services are more accessible to people with disabilities. Collectively, the global market spend of people with disabilities plus their families and carers is $8 trillion, which is an unbelievable amount of money that is kind of being left on the table in many situations at the moment. So that is really where we're really interested in kind of diving into. It's like, how can businesses get better at being more inclusive to be more sustainable as businesses, you know, in a post-pandemic world, which is what all businesses are going to be looking at over the next and are looking at now. How do we sustain? How do we grow? Where are the new markets? And there's an obvious market there that isn't being kind of maximized. So,
and could you give some examples of brands or initiatives that are currently leading the way in disability inclusion?
Yes, there's lots of brilliant examples. And actually, one of the things we do at the Valuable 500 is we issue a global trend report every quarter, where we gather together lots of brilliant examples of businesses, both within our signatories, but also outside of our signatories, that are doing interesting work in the space of disability inclusion from a product perspective, from an employment perspective. So we've seen a huge increase in the role of chief diversity officer as a first thing to say over the last 12 months in big businesses, in the wake of the George Floyd murder, and the topic being much more on the agenda in terms of race and ethnicity and inclusion broadly and globally from that perspective. So we're seeing that there's C-suite representation, which is fantastic. We're also seeing product diversity. So you've probably seen wheelchair Barbie, which is lovely to see alongside the other types of Barbie dolls that are available. We've seen Braille bricks launched in the last couple of years. From Lego, which is really interesting to see. There's quite a lot of different products that have started to emerge, which is sort of an interesting trend. And I'd love to see those sales figures and see how many of each people are, these organisations are selling in terms of, again, that business case. Quite recently, we've seen the RNIB launch a pregnancy test for the blind and for women who might not be able to see as clearly. Which has a raised surface rather than a digital line. Again, it's just thinking about that private moment where you would find out you're pregnant and only you would know that information has been something that hasn't been available to the blind over the years. And it seems such a shame in a way that all past women have had that experience, but exciting to think that all future women would be able to know that information themselves, at least for as long as they want to keep that secret and not have to be told by somebody else. Another interest, it's not a disability example, but you might have seen that Tesco launched their black plaster last year it's just examples like these that are sort of starting to come forward that you think, how has that taken so long? How have we had a lifetime of plasters always being one colour when of course there's a market for a black plaster? So I think it's just there are interesting examples across the whole inclusion mix. The diversity is definitely coming out in a really interesting innovative space, and I think the more examples that are shared by companies, the more exciting the space really feels in terms of the opportunity.
Yeah, it seems like we've certainly come a long way in terms of innovating around these inclusive products and services. Obviously there's still a long way to go. So yeah. What do you think are some of the main barriers that are stopping other brands from doing the same?
I think there can be a misperception that disability can be really expensive, that it's all about putting, can be about putting lifts in old buildings and accessibility for physical disability, that can be the thing that people think about when they think about disability inclusion as their first starter for 10. There can be a misconception that we might get it wrong. So if we get it wrong, then we'd rather not do anything at all than do the wrong thing. So we'd rather concentrate on our other elements that we kind of know we're doing right. I think it's the complexity and the fear around it, I think, that can sometimes be the barrier, which is one of the things we want to combat at the Valuable 500. It's that kind of, there's 500 companies here, and some of the companies are starters or a kind of self-confessed starters in the space. And it would be very easy for those companies to say, well, we've never done anything and we're not good enough to be part of the Valuable 500 because we don't do anything yet. Or they can say, we've never done anything, so now's the time to do something, and this is a great place for us to start. So there's kind of two sides to the coin for starter companies. I think in the middle, where we've got what we would call our kind of scaling companies, there are organizations that are doing brilliant pockets of work, but that work might not be elevated up to the C-suite and to the CEO. So how can we help support those organizations to elevate that work up, to get bigger and better and broader and further reaching with the work that they're doing? And again, the other argument for those companies to not join the Valuable 500 could have been, and sometimes what has been in the past, well, we want to wait until we've done it first. We want to wait until we've got it right. We want to wait until we've got something to share. Once we've done this 6 months, then we'll join, that then we're happy to play and to share. And our argument, the other side of that is, let's help now, because even you, where you are now, can help an organization that might not have started. So it's that kind of power in numbers in that sense. And then at the top end of the scale, where you've got organizations that are leaders in the category or that are doing really interesting work, it would be easy for those companies to say, we're okay, thanks, we're all right, we're doing well, we don't need to join a collective of other organizations. But what we're finding is the big players are happy to share. It's a space where almost competition gets put aside. It's actually, right, how do we all help each other to get better at employing people with disabilities, at doing research with people with disabilities, at innovating in the space so that we can create more products and more, it's almost an abundant mentality. And I think that's really important. It's kind of like we're so far behind in the space of disability as a globe. And that's, I live in the UK, we deal with a lot of companies in the US. When you look at other countries, that there are a lot of countries where disability is very, very much feared and treated in a very different way to how it is in the UK and the US even. So that kind of geographical disparity also needs to be looked at. So the fear can exist in different ways. And I think having global companies on board where they are represented in lots of different markets will really support some of those markets that might be further behind to get further ahead, so that there's a kind of job to do at all angles, really, to help our companies and beyond to support the changes.
So essentially it's about really working together and leveraging the shared knowledge of the collective to make real change.
Exactly that.
In your opinion, how can brands make a real difference when it comes to disability inclusion?
In so many ways, so many things that can be done. I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, depending on where companies are in their maturity models. So if you're a company that hasn't ever done anything before, I think it's starting. I mean, you could join the Valuable 500, not to plug it, but there are still spaces in the Valuable 500 to join. So there is that kind of power in the collective in order to join with us. But taking any action at all, you know, talking to your people and saying, this is important to us. We are looking at the way that we include people with disabilities across our business. And we're going to be sending out a questionnaire within the organization to look at what is the live data in terms of how many people work for us with disabilities, in that both physical and invisible. And we want to know where we are as an organization so that we can get better at this. You know, I think that's the piece for us. It's how can leading from the top and leaders helping the people that work for them to feel happy to disclose information that they might otherwise not want to share. I think organizations that are scaling work and that are doing great activity already, they can get more involved by sharing more and sharing with other companies that might be further behind. I think it's really about taking one action, whatever that action is. I think the only wrong thing to do at this stage is to do nothing. You know, we're in a post-pandemic world where the whole world has had to transform overnight. So I think change can happen if leaders want it to happen. And actually Paul Polman, who's our chairman, he did a great article in the Independent, I think the other week. And it was sort of saying that CEOs can make changes happen in days, that governments and charities would take years to kind of legislate for, vote for, enforce into businesses and try and make happen. So it really is in the power of the leader to make decisions, to drive agendas forward, all agendas, but if they choose to drive the disability inclusion agenda forward, it will happen and it will start to make a difference. So yeah, that would be my advice really, is just take one step, whatever that is.
Yeah, so shedding that fear and just starting somewhere, even no matter how small it is.
Yeah, and there's so many organisations out there in many in every country that will help organisations to look at workplace adjustments, to do an audit of their products and services to help support them on the ground in terms of their business. So in the UK, we've got the Business Disability Forum as an example. We've got Purple Space that build employee resource groups for organisations. We've got the Australian Network for Disability over in Australia. We've got Access Israel in Israel, Enable India. There's hundreds of these organisations that are there and ready to help and ready to support companies within their markets to get better in terms of the way that they approach both employees and customers with disabilities, and to learn and for training and all those sorts of areas. So I think once there's a willingness to do something, there's plenty of support out there to help companies. And if anybody needs any advice or pointers, then we are always happy to signpost to companies that are there that are doing brilliant work.
And my final question, what does diversity and inclusion mean to you?
To me personally, it means lots of different things. You've probably heard the analogy of diversity is making sure that you've got the right people around the table. And inclusion is about making sure everybody has a voice at that table. There's another version of that where, you know, diversity is about inviting everyone to the party, but inclusion is about making sure everybody can dance or is invited to dance. For me, diversity is about having the right mix of voices to make sure the innovation and the magic happens, and making sure that everybody is represented. So from a business perspective, if we accept that 15% of the world's population has some form of disability, and I say accept because that data is very old. It's from a report in 2011, so it's 10 years out of date. So I would imagine it's higher than that. Then how can we be serving our customers to the best of our ability if we're missing out 15% of our customer base in some guise, or if we're not including them in the research, if we're not including them in representation, if we're not seeing disabled people in our advertising, in our marketing, on the front of magazines, on the front of our music covers, how can we be serving the customers we're trying to serve without having a diverse mix at the table in order to feed into that? And then on the inclusion side, for me, it's all about fairness. I don't think there's anybody out there that hasn't felt excluded at some point in their life, no matter where they're from, who they are, what sort of background they've had, what country they were born in. I think we've all experienced exclusion, and we all know that feeling. I know that feeling right now. I can feel it inside me right now, that feeling. And there's just an unfairness to me that people with disabilities are excluded so often straight away, before there's been even a chance to go for the job, to be represented, to stand up and speak, to, you know, I find that it's about fairness on the inclusion side. So I that might sound very altruistic, but I would love to see a fairer world where everybody gets to play a part. But also I'd love to see in the shops and in the stores and in the services that anybody can participate, everybody can be autonomous, everybody can spend their money. And I think that will make a much more interesting and engaging and fruitful world for everybody.
Well, it looks like you're on the right track into driving that change with the Valuable 500.
I hope so. I think somebody described it the other day as a world-changing movement. But it's only going to be world changing if all 500 companies play, you know, want to play together and want to do the work. So it's about us all moving together as one. The first phase of work that we've been doing has been building the movement, has been building this amazing movement of 500 CEOs who have all committed to action. And the next phase that we're about to go into is about all 500 coming together to move in one direction collectively, to really start to move the dial in different impact areas. But there's more. There'll be more on that once we launch phase two in May. So I'll tell you more about that then.
Well, good luck with launching phase two. We're very excited to see what will come out of it.
Thank you so much. You guys are going to be a key part of that. So thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Emma.
We're very lucky to be working with you on it. We're very excited.
It's very exciting. Well, thank you. Happy International Women's Day and Month to you and to all of the women out there.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Disruptive Branding. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe and do leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It helps other brand lovers to find us.